My guest today is Max Žiga. He is a prompt engineer based in Sarajevo, Bosnia. Max, thank you for being on the Anablock podcast. Can you maybe to start off with, tell us what is a prompt engineer?
Yeah, sure. So prompt engineering, that's like new job in AI world. It's basically like teaching AI how to understand and respond to our task and what we want. So basically, it's all about crafting your questions in a specific way where you write instructions. And basically, AI, especially large language models, will follow our instructions and create most accurate and most helpful responses. It's like giving better explanations for something, giving instructions, and based on those instructions, we will get better response. And that's everything about prompt engineering. We have different ways, different types of prompt engineering. We have prompt engineering for LLMs, for large language models, which are chatbots. Then we have prompt engineering for image generators like Stable Diffusion, where we write prompts for images, what we want to on image. Also, we have negative prompt engineering for image generators, where we write what we don't want on image. Then we have also prompt engineering for generating audio. And yeah, there are many different ways and different types of prompt engineering in AI world.
Excellent. Very interesting. How did you get started? What brought you into the AI world?
Let's first talk about how I started with everything related to technology, because I'm young. I'm 70 years old. So yeah, technology has always fascinated me since I was little. For example, at the age of 5 or 6, I loved watching my dad assemble computers since he worked with them. And by the age of 7, I literally knew all the parts of computer. Later, I continued to progress more and more in my knowledge and skills using computers. And I think that by the age of 11, I became interested in programming. At that time, it was just interesting to me, and I didn't have a vision that I would work as a programmer, because since I was in elementary school, I wanted to be a programmer. And I didn't start with that idea immediately, because the computer science teacher who was teaching me was just amazing, one of the best teachers, and he loved to talk about various topics like about technology, programming, games, and so on. And because of that, I was open to him, and I started getting interested in programming. So he's one of the reasons why I started with programming. I started with QBasic, and then I moved on C++. And basically, 2 years ago, I also enrolled in the gymnasium and joined the IT class. So we have subjects focused on programming and computer science. When I enrolled, I had desire to become either software engineer or full stack developer. And last year I worked on project with the older students using React. And during the work on that project, I realized that I was losing interest in being a programmer. I don't know why, but I didn't feel the same level of interest in programming as before. I worked on the front end and completed all the tasks, but somehow due to some kind of stress, I lost motivation and wanted to become something else, but still something related to IT. And just at that time, ChatGPT was released, and it was something, let's say, extraordinary to me. I started using it immediately 2 days after its release, because I was in Discord server for OpenAI because of DALL-E, and literally when it I saw that release and I started using it. It couldn't speak other languages, and you could ask anything, including illegal things, and it didn't have good security, and it was really interesting thing. Later, it could speak other languages as well, and I used because it I found it interesting. I used more and more, and later I learned about prompt engineering, writing prompts for LLMs to get higher quality responses. And at that time, I was thinking logically, and I realized that AI will become increasingly popular in the future around the world, and that prompt engineering could help me with this problem where my job wasn't interesting because I enjoyed using ChatGPT, and I found it fun to write prompts. I concluded that I should do what I find interesting and that I can learn. To do well. And since ChatGPT is a new thing, I realized that people will be looking for prompt engineers for jobs in the future. That's when I started learning prompt engineering, like all details about prompt engineering. I began by learning simple methods like the role method, where we give the LLM a role, then the methods of using Markdown to show fantastic things like titles, subtitles, etc. How to make good prompt structure, because structures are really important prompts. How to determine the format of the response, like SSH structure, and so on. This helped me to create, let's say, okay prompts. They are not something big, but they're okay. And from then until April, I think, I just learned and improved my skills. In April, I learned about FlowGPT and that they were organizing a prompt hackathon. This was literally perfect timing because I was starting with prompt engineering and there is hackathon, and in my head, this was like nice opportunity.
And I'm sorry, who was organizing the hackathon?
FlowGPT, it's FlowGPT prompt hackathon.
Got it.
And yeah, and they had 10 different categories, and I was really hyped. I want to win like at least one because rewards were really nice. Like one prize for each category was $500, so it was really nice. And I was making high quality prompts. I tried my best to make prompts for almost every category, and I dedicated about, let's say, 3 hours to each prompt, so I could create a test, fix, and so on each prompt. At the end of the hackathon, I was the winner in 4 categories, winning $2,000. And this was really nice thing. This really motivated me to continue, because once I became the winner with the most categories, I realized that I had the potential to continue and pursue prompt engineering professionally. You know, on the FlowGPT Discord server, they told me that there will be a prompt hackathon season 2, and I started learning some complex methods for it, so I can prepare myself to win again. First, I started learning methods that involve providing examples. I learned a very important thing that I recommend to absolutely everyone, which is to write examples of something in the prompts. I started with few shots, which is just writing examples and instructions of what the task is, and this is very simple method. Everyone can use it. You just write instructions, then you write few examples, and then basically that's it. It's very simple. And after that, I learned a more advanced method. Let's say an upgraded version of few shots. It's called chain of thoughts, and this method was one of the most interesting to me because it introduced me to reasoning and thinking methods. The chain of thoughts method itself, like few shots, focus on providing examples. But here, there is one interesting twist. Instead of just providing examples, we explain each example in detail, which leads to more accurate responses from the model. Literally, let's say that idea behind the chain of thoughts method is to write examples with let's say, clear and logical thought process. This means that we will explain the examples as we would think in our heads. And this helps the model learn how to think, and it will create its response by thinking, and as we did in the examples. Sometimes it can even do some work instead of thinking to complete a task. So instead of directly answering a question, it will do smaller steps and then answer each small step it has taken. And this method is useful for complex tasks like math tasks or generating something new. Later, I learned self-consistency method, which is very simple, just regenerating the responses. But it was the key to learning the tree of thoughts. It's combination of self-consistency and chain of thoughts. And in self-consistency method, we regenerate the response to see if the results is accurate. For example, if the task is, let's say, for math, because all reasoning methods are related to arithmetic and math, if we regenerate it three times and get, for example, results 2, 2, 3, then we can say that 2 is the correct result and correct answer because it is the most consistent result in each regeneration. And in train of thoughts,
so let me just back up a bit here. So when you first started, I guess how did you heard of ChatGPT probably, and then you got more interested in AI and kind of came across maybe prompt engineering, but how did you actually get started? How did you, before, obviously, you know quite a bit today, but where, when you first learned the kind of first types of prompt engineering methods, I guess, where did you come across the knowledge base that you used? Was that online or was that taught at your high school or something else?
Not really in high school. Everything I learned was on the internet. Okay. I read a lot of research papers from Microsoft, from Google, and they're all based about AI and prompting methods. Like chain of thoughts method was my first research paper, and it was like start of the learning reasoning methods, and that's like my starting of learning complex methods. And yeah, basically I learned from research papers that I found on site archive. They have a lot of interesting research papers, but also I watched some videos on YouTube, like what is prompt engineering, what is ChatGPT, because ChatGPT was a new thing in that time. And yeah, but one interesting thing is that that ChatGPT wasn't my first encounter with artificial intelligence and chatbots. My first encounter was in, I think, 2017, when I found a bot called Cleverbot. This bot was launched in 2008, I think, and it works by relying on a database of past human conversations. And like most bots, it uses pattern matching to respond to our questions. Sometimes the responses aren't well written in terms of grammar, but on the Turing test, which tests whether something is machine or not, Cleverbot was judged to be a human. And I think that this Cleverbot was really interesting. It gave me like, it. I used it for fun, but besides it was for fun, let's say that I can learn from it because it was a chatbot. I didn't know what was a chatbot, but it was interesting to use. And yeah, that's it about my journey of AI. Yeah,
and very interesting. And what are you working on today? What are some of the projects that you're involved in?
Right now, I'm working only for FlowGPT and for private clients. I had clients that want many different things, like cloning people, creating prompts for something else. But cloning people, as I said, this was one of the most recent projects. It was really complex because when you're cloning someone, you literally need to find a way how to explain the style of writing, of talking, literally everything the same as that person, which is very difficult to achieve in large language
model. Maybe just if you can explain to us the concept of cloning people as far as like mimicking their, I guess, speech or semantics, or is it something else? Like when you say clone, what do you mean by that?
Cloning people. So yeah, it's really difficult term. But cloning people in terms of chatbots is when you make chatbot to talk same as someone, like grasp writing style. And this cloning people is a very detailed and complex process because you have to pay attention to every detail. And I worked on this prompt for this client for several days. It took me almost 3 hours every day creating and testing. Literally, it was really hard to work on this project, but in the end, I succeeded because I worked for several days. Every time the prompt failed, I started over writing the prompt. The biggest problem in prompt engineering is that you can't test a prompt until you finish it. For example, in programming, When we write a code for a program, we can test functions, or if we are creating a web app, we can test each page individually. But in prompt engineering, there's no testing until you are finished. And when you work on projects like this, where you need a lot of detail, the final prompt will be quite long, around 3,000 tokens. And one token is roughly equal to 4 characters. You can probably now conclude how complex this project was. And I forgot to mention that the client also requested a small jailbreak so that this prompt could talk about some topics that are not normally allowed in LLMs, which added additional complications in this prompt. And also I had problems with hallucinations. Sometimes everything worked, but the writing style wasn't good. Or sometimes the writing style was good, but topics it talked about weren't good, which is one type of hallucination. So I couldn't balance it out. And in the end, I had to use the help of parameters, which is really interesting thing. Typically, prompt engineers would only change the temperature parameter because it controls the creativity of response. But in this case, that wasn't the right thing to do. If I put higher temperature, it would be too creative. And if I put too lower temperature, it would be too direct and wouldn't follow the writing style of the examples I gave. So temperature remained at 1, and I experimented with other parameters like topi, presence penalty and frequency penalty. And yeah, basically I changed parameters, and with my instructions in prompt, I made real good prompt. Using this prompt, the model could talk just like that person and there were no problems. In the end, I was well paid, and probably the reason why prompt engineers are paid, let's say as much as programmers, sometimes even more than programmers. When I say as freelancer prompt engineers, it is more complicated. There is no testing until you finish the whole prompt. And other reasons I have already mentioned is that if client finds jailbreak, it's more complex. And yeah, and how I made this prompt is actually by explaining, like, first I started with explaining the person that I'm cloning. Then I explained, like, let's say grammar, like, which type of words this person is using. And then I started with
was this for just English language or for kind of multiple languages?
Only English language, because when you are cloning people, you can't really make clone of someone in different language. It's not really, LLMs can't really understand how to clone people in different languages because they are trained on English. But if you're using different LLM that is trained on different language, it is possible to make perfect clone on different language. But for this cloning prompt, I started with explaining person, explaining grammar, explaining words that this person is using in conversation. And then I provided a lot of examples. Examples are most important thing in prompt engineering. Without examples, you can't really make, let's say, good prompts, because LLMs need to understand something to create something new, because it's trained on something like on database of things. And to make it LLMs focus on something new, you need to provide good examples. And then you need to explain examples. So let's say, so LLM can understand why examples are written in that way we provided. And after examples, I provided more details about words, like what type of filler words that person is using, what type of starting words, what type of slangs, etc., etc. And after testing, after modifications, after multiple starting over, I finally created prompt, and I can say that I'm satisfied with that prompt.
And what's the business use case for this application?
So basically, I don't know if someone already saw this, but let's say that AI personas are really popular right now, especially on social medias. I saw that people are paying prompt engineers to clone influencers, like some girl influencers, to make virtual girlfriends. And basically people are paying like $1 per message to talk with these bots, because I don't know, that's really weird, but but people are earning money on it. Basically, you can make clone of influencers, like virtual girlfriends, or you can create someone like, I can create clone of myself, and I already did. I cloned myself and made GBT on ChatGBT because there was no need to work with parameters on the API, so GPT-4 on GBTs did the job quite well. And I can say that if someone using my clone, it can find answers to some questions. Like, I provided knowledge, full knowledge about myself, and when someone is using my clone, it can find answers about me, which is really useful.
Very interesting. So that would be kind of something like having a essentially, well, I guess there can be multiple use cases, from not only kind of having like a biography, but also maybe being able to interact with a virtual version of me, maybe online.
Yeah.
Or have you seen it? Yeah, go ahead.
Here's also one use case of cloning people. I saw that people are cloning, if someone passed away, like someone from your family, dad or mom, people are cloning their dads or moms. Like, I know that people cloned their family members, and they then created a voice model of their family members. So basically, you can set up everything, let's say, on Telegram, and then talk with someone. Like, if someone from your family passed away, you can talk with that member, and it will talk with you in same voice. Like, you will hear same voice, you will hear same way of talking. So this is really interesting, and I think that this is one of the useful cloning things with AI.
And how would you fine-tune that model as far as being able to essentially have it have the right data set?
Okay,
where actually it can not only impersonate my voice, let's say maybe my kind of semantics, but also being able to know specific kind of details about my life or professional experience.
Okay, I can explain the whole process of doing that. So first, you mentioned something about fine-tuning. Like, for example, this scenario where I made this clone of this person, client didn't want fine-tuning because that client thought that fine-tuning would be too expensive. But fine-tuning is actually really useful. It's much cheaper than using GPT-4, which is also one reason why to use fine-tuning. And how to fine-tune a model? Basically, you just provide examples of like data set of examples how that person is talking. Like, you can copy, let's say, whole conversation with that person, let's say, on your Instagram, on your Facebook, or any chat application. Just copy examples and provide them to fine-tune a model. After you fine-tune a model, you can write a prompt that will follow instructions, provide more examples if you want, which can actually improve quality. And after that, you need to have voice model of that of voice. And to create voice model of voice, you first need to have that set where that person is talking. I made actually voice model of myself. I talked like 1 hour to microphone to create perfect voice model of myself, and it worked well. And at the end, developers need to connect API calling with LLM and calling with this voice model and connect both. So you are sending a response from LLM to a voice model and then generate response. And then you can use it. And it's really simple, but when you're programming, it's not really simple, but I think that you can understand what I mean.
Yeah. So let's say, like, you know, one of the, you know, my background is software engineering, and I've been doing a lot of consulting, and really a consultant at the end of the day is really a person that has a lot more, has a lot of experience, really. At the end of, I mean, that's kind of the one of the main traits is really having like a lot of projects under your belt, a lot of systems that you worked with, and that way it's easier for you to give advice to someone else that's maybe trying to implement some system for a business or something like that. So let's say if you want to clone like an IT or a software consultant, the value that that person really has, as I said, is really the amount of information they have accumulated over a period of time. Like, how would you maybe extract that that type of sort of like experience and intelligence and fine tune a model to essentially virtually replace a consultant with a virtual consultant?
I think that it's not really efficient to fine tune a model if you want to have to clone someone with that amount of knowledge. It's better to create new model that is based on that knowledge. And basically what you can do is to ask that person to start writing everything about its knowledge, like provide examples, provide all codes that that person have wrote, and basically explain everything, all knowledge. And after that, just create new model, and that's it. Because fine-tuning a model for that amount of knowledge is not really useful, because you are just fine-tuning to get model to talk about programming, but instead you can create model that is talking about programming and nothing else. And that's why it's better to make new model instead of fine-tuning based on that knowledge.
So would it be if you're, for example, trying to create, let's say, like a subject matter expert in a specific domain, and if you are, for example, feeding, or essentially if you're like trying to kind of like have some kind of like a RAG architecture, where you are essentially like feeding feeding to the LLM like specific knowledge base. So if I, for example, wanted to, let's just for sake of this conversation, say I want a React specialist. So I want this chatbot to be an absolute React specialist, know everything about React, and that's it, nothing else. Obviously ChatGPT, like Claude 2, tools like that can give you something like that, or some kind of like a React specialist. Maybe it's not going to be as maybe good, but I guess what I'm trying to ask is, like, are there any advantages sort of building a bot, chatbot, on top of any of these APIs that are available today, like through OpenAI or Anthropic, and building a subject matter expert? Meaning, will that kind of custom chatbot be better than just a kind of generic, I guess, GPT model like ChatGPT or Claude 2? I guess, do you have any thoughts about that?
As we already know, all generic models we have now, like GPT, like Claude, we can say Llama, Palm, etc., they are trained on large data sets. And all those data sets are not only for programming, but also for different things, like everything else that we can ask. And it is, we can say that if you make custom chat, custom model that is based on only programming, that it will be better than those generic models. But actually, there's one twist. I don't know how good we can make a model, but GPT is really nice model. It has over 1 million training parameters, I think. And even if we make custom model that is focused on programming, I think that GPT will, again, will be better than that custom model, because it is it will understand better. It has better training data. But if we succeed in training like GPT, like if you train our model like GPT with that amount of parameters with many machine algorithms, then that CAST model will be better.
Interesting. What are some other, I guess, technologies or maybe techniques do you use to do some sort of like testing or quality assurance when you're building your models? Essentially, when you release something into production, like, let's say, cloning people, how do you test it to make sure it's actually giving you the output that you were expecting?
So here's the thing. When I'm creating prompt, I first start with brainstorming, like how my prompt will look like. I basically plan everything. And that's the main thing in creating prompts, to basically plan everything. And that's first step. Next step is actually research, because sometimes prompt is actually something that I don't know. Like, I had clients that wanted prompts for marketing, and I don't really know marketing, and I need to research about marketing techniques, like what is best marketing technique, and then I need to understand and explain that marketing technique. And after everything I do, like research, plan, brainstorming, I start with creating prompt. Now, after I create prompt, I actually test by myself. I have a specific way of testing. So I provide, like when I'm testing, I provide hard tasks, like tasks to test if prompt will follow my rules. And if it's not following rules, I will just try to make sure that it will follow rules. But never mind. After I create prompt, after I say that it's good, then I ask other people to test it. And based on people's feedback, I can make improvements. I can create it better, because let's say that critic is actually a good thing, because based on critic, you can find new ways to fix problems. And based on feedback, you can create improvements. And that's basically it. And that's why I actually need a lot of time to create this prompt, which was a clone of this person, because client tested a lot, provided feedback. And based on each feedback, I made improvements. And at the end, I created a full prompt that is working based on all the feedback. And that's it.
Very interesting. Are you, so like, what would be some kind of like an advice if someone is new to, in general, I guess, AI and prompt engineering, but obviously they have like interest like you do to learn? How would you, or what would you recommend? What are some of the effective steps today to actually become a successful prompt engineer?
Okay, so I already had several posts on my LinkedIn profile where I explained some tips and mistakes that most beginners make. So let's imagine you have learned about prompt engineering, you're interested in it, and you want to get started. The first thing you would probably do is start with writing prompts. However, in your place, I wouldn't do that. What I would do first is understand how LLMs works, because you're writing prompts for them. Similarly, I will try to understand difference between AI and LLMs, because these are two different terms and people are always messing around with AI and LLM terms. Once I understand these things, I would go deeper into LLMs, understand the concept of tokenization, machine learning, and the like. And only then I would start with prompt engineering. I would start writing prompts in my own style, just to see how I do, and to have a basis for a later comparison of old and new prompts. After that, I will start learning easy methods like the role method, few shots method, emotions, psychology, and the like, which are very simple methods. And once I make enough good prompts using these methods, I will start with harder ones like chain of thoughts and tree of thoughts. And when I learn everything well, then I'm ready to just improve my knowledge. I would start like with theoretical part, learning like everything about artificial intelligence, and then read popular research papers also related to artificial intelligence or prompt engineering, and some complex, more complex prompting methods. From those research papers, I would create new prompts, like my personal methods, and come up with my own writing style. I know a lot of people who have created unique styles of writing prompts. Some people used a style without using vowels, like A, to save tokens. Some use emojis to explain something, like let's say an emoji of person and laptop. It would like explain some work or writing. And I know people will write without using space, but it's not efficient. And they have various other creative methods. It's important to understand your writing style, and basically that's it. This will help everyone writing prompts. And yeah, and as for the most common mistakes, because I mentioned mistakes too, usually people are overcomplicating prompts as beginners, which is bad because you can't complicate a prompt if you don't know how to complicate. Then we have ignoring the LLM's capabilities, because sometimes beginners try to do something that LLM is not capable of, which is a big mistake. Likewise, we have ignoring the format, often writing instructions in what format you want. The response is really helpful, as it can improve the quality, structure, and even make the response more better to read. And we have some other minor mistakes that are not really important, but for example, ignoring the context and so on. Basically, those are some of the tips I would personally give, but there are many other tips, but these are like main tips.
Very interesting. So is the, like, I guess how much overall when you are designing your prompts or engineering them, how much thought do you give specifically which or LLM do you work? I guess my question would be also, would do you work sort of like with multiple, you know, LLMs that are currently available or on the market, or what is your approach in general? Do you kind of like customize each prompt specifically for the LLM that you're working with, or can you kind of walk us through that process?
So GPT models are not only models that I'm working with. I'm working with other models like Llama, like Palm, and we have other like open source models like Pygmalion, and I work with them because on FlowGPT we provide all of these models for free, and I want to make sure that all models are good. So if someone have questions about these models, so I can explain how they work, how to create prompts for them, and similar. And for writing prompts for different models, it's actually similar. Like all large language models are similar, and writing prompts for all is, let's say, same. Sometimes you need to understand like how tokenization for different models works, so you can make instructions based on that tokenization process, so you can change change words to other synonyms, but usually it's same, and all models work good with reasoning methods, because reasoning methods LLMs can't think or make reasoning tasks, reasoning conclusions without explanation how to do that, and basically, using methods for reasoning, we can achieve better responses. And reasoning methods work with almost each LLM. And I think that if you use reasoning methods, that you will not make bad results. So my suggestion for everyone is to use reasoning methods for any large language model, because yeah, it is working with any. And yeah, that's it, basically, for it.
Very interesting. So essentially, like, they're pretty much you're using, sounds like, for the most part at least, like exactly same prompts regardless of the model itself. So you don't, what about like, as far as like, if you have a specific maybe task to solve, are some models better than the others in the market for some use cases? Like, so for example, going back to your cloning people or characters use case, like, do you, I guess, how do you decide what's the best model to use?
Okay, so all large language models have pros and cons, and that's the fact. And many of them are more like large language models have pros and cons that some of them are creative, some of them are good at reasoning, some of them are good actually in reasoning tasks, some of them are good with math, etc., etc. And if you need prompt that will achieve some type of creativity, you can test different large language models to see which model is more creative. For example, in one of my experiments, I found out that Llama model is more creative than GPT 3.5 in some use cases, like it generated more creative ideas. And that's why I found out that it's more interesting. But GPT, like GPT 3.5, is more accurate in math tasks and arithmetic tasks than Llama. But GPT 4 is better than GPT 3.5. So all models have pros and cons. And yeah, but hugest pros and cons problem that we have among large language models is price and how much you spend using these models, because sometimes prompt is really long, and like, let's say that prompt is around 1,000 tokens, and if you use the prompt on GPT-4, it's really expensive, and if you use on GPT 3.5, it's okay. But what if you want to create responses? Then you need to use Llama. But what if Llama is more expensive than GPT 3.5? Then you need to modificate that prompt with more tokens to make it more creative. So there are many different ways how to find best model. But overall, in my opinion, best models are GPT, because I think that they have balance between creativity, understanding, and that's why they are my top picks.
Got it. Excellent. So you mentioned you also are working for Flow GPT. I believe they're also kind of based here in the Bay Area. But can you tell us a little bit about Flow GPT? What do they do? And maybe like, what is their platform about?
Yeah, sure. So Flow GPT is largest, like one of the most largest prompt engineering sites, where you can access to over 100,000 prompts for different large language models. We have GPT-4, GPT 3.5, we have Llama, Palm, and few open source models. And on Flow GPT, you can find prompts for anything, like literally anything. If you need for business, you can find thousands of prompts for business. If you need for school, you can find thousand prompts for school. If you need for something else, you can find for that something else. And we have really nice like repository of prompts. Expect that thing with prompts. We have hackathons, and the hackathons, best prompt engineers can win really nice rewards. So I started with hackathons. I won season one and season two, and after that I got hired, and now I'm here helping people with prompt engineering. I'm also managing community. I'm judging prompts on hackathons. I'm one of the judges, and basically I think that Flow GPT is best opportunity for everyone who wants to start with prompt engineering, because you can find examples, like live examples of prompts, understand different styles of writing, different methods, how different models works. You can access for free different models. Like you can access for free GPT-4, you can access for free GPT-3.5, etc. And that's really nice thing about FlowGPT, and also experience, finding friends, networking. Sometimes you can get a job. I saw a lot of people who find a job after FlowGPT hackathons, because clients found that they won like one category. They contact them, and they got a job. So that's also an interesting thing. And yeah, basically FlowGPT is really nice site to start with prompt engineering, with AI generally, with AI, because we have also Discord server, and we have daily discussions about AI, about prompt engineering. And yeah, overall community is nice. Everyone is ready to help you. And yeah, that's overall everything about FlowGPT.
Interesting. Yeah, thanks for sharing. So kind of in closing, you know, obviously the whole AI space has kind of exponentially grown over the last year. And there's been just a lot of like technical improvements over just past few months. I'm curious, like, I guess, do you have any sort of forecast as far as where do you see not only the GPT models, but in general, the entire space kind of reaching even higher ground from the perspective of intelligence? Like, what do you see that is happening in the community or in the kind of the AI space? And what do you foresee coming in the near future?
I see in the future that we will get AGI, artificial general intelligence, a new level of artificial intelligence that will reach the point of singularity, which means that artificial intelligence will have the same level of knowledge as humans and will be able to do more things at once. And I think that that's really important thing in AI future. There are many theories about AGI, and I don't want to go in details because we don't have time. We still don't know everything about AGI. We can only talk hypothetically what will be, but theoretically, AGI should have the same or greater knowledge of humor, be able to do more things at once, have somehow improving the reasoning, be able to think, and so on. So instead of writing instructions for reasoning and thinking, it will be able to think, etc., etc. I know that recently, like 2 days ago, Google announced a new multimodal model called Gemini, which can theoretically do multiple things at once, such as generating text, code, analyzing images, analyzing video and sound. And in their presentations, it's all fantastic. They say it's better than GPT-4, and everyone was excited about it. But I think yesterday, they found out that it was all actually marketing and edit. Everyone thought that it would be best model ever because of multimodality function, but it's not. In their benchmark, they used advanced prompting methods for testing Gemini, while they used few shots for GPT-4. And they said it was better than GPT-4, but it's not, even though it's multimodal, which means that it can do different things. So we won't have AGI yet, even though some people thought that Gemini was actually the beginning of AGI. But the first one to make AGI, in my theory, will be OpenAI. They have already mentioned several times that they are on their way to AGI. Sam Altman, their CEO, I think was fired because he came to conclusion for AGI. And I'm not sure, but he's back, and I'm sure that they are working on getting the AGI first. They also mentioned the term Q-star, which is actually something that will lead to AGI, etc., etc. And community is really excited about AGI, about this Q-star thing, about everything. Like, this Q-star thing is algorithm that should be designed to help the model learn the best actions and reward it for doing so. And people started to make like research papers about QStar, which is actually a good thing because we started with developing theories about future, about AGI. And I think that that slowly we are getting into contact with AGI, even if we don't have it yet, we are getting into contact. So that's really an interesting thing about future of AI.
Excellent. Well, that's very interesting. Yeah, we'll definitely keep our eyes open, and AGI, I'm sure it will be here the next, I would say, at least
5 years. Less than,
what you think, five? I was going to say maybe less than two, but okay, I'll take five. Excellent. Well, thank you, Mark, for your time. I mean, this was very, very educational, and I would love to have you on the show again, hopefully in the near future. There's definitely a lot of things to discuss. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you for inviting, and it was really nice to speak here.
Thank you.